Morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. The time is 5 minutes after 9 a.m., January 31st, 2012. With me today is Senator Thomas, Senator Egan, and Senator McGuire. We have three bills on the agenda today. Senate Bill 70, Alaska Health Benefit Exchange, Senate Bill 13, Waive Park Fee for Disabled Veterans, and then Senate Bill 62, Civil Legal Services Fund. First up is Senate Bill 70 by Senator French regarding the Alaska Health Benefit Exchange. This is the second hearing on this bill. We heard it for the first time the 28th of March, last session, almost a year ago. At this meeting, the committee had a lot of questions, and Senator French provided a timely written response to each of the members in each of the members' packets today. The intent today is to have the sponsor reintroduce the bill, give the members an opportunity to ask follow-up questions, take any additional public testimony, and then we'll set the bill aside for further review. But it's been quite a delay, and it's a fairly lengthy bill, so we thought we'd just kind of treat it almost like a first hearing to kind of refresh everybody's memory. Let the record also reflect we've been joined by Senator Olson. With us today is Senator French to present the bill. And Senator French, if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then kind of walk us through this bill again, and then maybe you could walk through some of the questions, however you want to do your format. We'll be fine with the chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning. For the record, my name is Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. SB 70 is a complex bill, and I appreciate the committee giving its attention to it, and I appreciate the thoroughness that the committee brings to this bill, because it's while it's a fairly simple idea, it's a complex bill to put this this idea into work, and the more brains that look at this bill, the better. So I appreciate the time and attention that the committee is giving to this important subject. The exchange is an outgrowth of the Affordable Care Act that passed Congress 2 years ago now, and it is a at its simplest, it's simply a website that the state will create. And in that website, there will be insurance policies that people who do not have insurance now will be directed to go and make an important decision about which policy they're going to select. It's important to keep in mind that these are policies that are offered by the by private companies. It's not a state insurance plan. It's not a state entity. These are private insurance plans that will be offered to the public, and the exchange simply helps them make an informed decision when they make that important selection. And so each state has been authorized to create its own exchange. If we do not show progress on having made an exchange by January of next year, the federal government will begin to create its own for Alaska, because the important and most crucial aspects of the federal reform law go into effect in 2014. That's when the so-called individual mandate becomes law. That's when each person in America must either have an insurance policy or show why they cannot get one. It's a fundamental step towards getting everybody in the country covered by a health insurance policy. It's designed to help eliminate the free rider problem, whereby people who do not have insurance enjoy free medical care through emergency rooms mainly, and to try to get them all, in essence, paying something into the pool. There are also huge aspects of price control and access issues designed into the larger federal bill. This bill, again, is designed to help people make that important choice. Part of that choice will help direct them, when they plug in their personal information to the website, to government care. We know, for example, that there are many, many people who are eligible for Denali KidCare, for Medicaid, who are not signed up for those programs because they just don't know that they're qualified. When you go to the exchange, when you plug in your information, when you see which plan you want to select, you'll be guided towards Medicaid or Denali KidCare if you're eligible. And so there's an important information sharing function with respect to the exchange as well. So that's the basic idea. I guess the a good place to begin is were the questions that were asked during the last session, and you should have a letter back to the committee from me. And I want to thank you for those questions. They really helped us go through very, very carefully every single provision of the bill and answer, was this mandated by federal law or was it not? and it helped me get to know the federal bill better. It helped me get to know this bill better. And as you can see, you know, the vast majority of the pieces of the bill that you have in front of you are basically mandated by federal law that if you're going to have an exchange, it has to have all these pieces. It's mainly designed around consumer protection to make sure that people aren't fleeced when they're, you know, if you're going to force a person to buy an insurance policy, you want to make sure that they get a policy that actually works for them. The few areas that are not mandatory are things you'd want to have, and I'll just use as an example in Section 2 of the bill, A27 is not mandatory. That appears on page, I want to say 9. Sorry, it's page 8. But you want the exchange to apply for planning and establishment grants. That's a good idea. You know, reach out there and grab some federal money. Likewise, A28 is not mandatory, but it's something that Senator Hoffman inquired about the last time we were here, and that is, you know, can we form pools? One of the concerns that the administration has is that Alaska will not be a big enough pool to have this work in an efficient way in the markets. But A28 allows the exchange to begin looking at pooling mechanisms whereby we may join with Idaho, Montana, other northwest states that have similar populations. So that's an overview of the sort of the idea of the bill, some of the specifics. I guess I'd turn to the committee for questions and dialogue.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just regarding the last comment that you made regarding pooling, how many people in the state of Alaska, remind us again, how many people in the state of Alaska are not covered by health insurance at this point in time?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the last best estimate is about 115,000. 115,000 individuals would suddenly be looking for insurance under the bill and under this and through this exchange.
If I may follow up? I'm not sure if it actually is pertinent to the question of pooling, but that's a lot of people, even if a percentage of them were served by insurance. So I was just curious what the number was. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator French, of those 150,000, does that include the Native population as well? Because a majority of those are not insured, but they are covered under the Indian Health Service 638 contractors.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, my belief is that does not count IHS beneficiaries. You know, that's an interesting group in that, you know, they're not formally covered by a health insurance policy, yet at the same time they have access to care. Which is, you know, an interesting way of solving the problem, really. If you built more clinics, more people could get care, they would be able to, they wouldn't need an insurance policy.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue, Senator French, you talked about in 2014, there's an individual mandate that's going to come from the federal government. What happens if we have a change of presidents and the next president is diametrically opposed to what has happened during the last 4 years? How does it affect this legislation? And there's a second part, but I'll listen to the answer to the first question.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I guess you're assuming that there's a House and a Senate that would go along with the president's desire to repeal the Affordable Care Act. If it's repealed, obviously the exchange would not be necessary because unless they enacted something substantially similar, it's possible, frankly, that the United States Supreme Court strikes down the individual mandate, which a lot of people feel would gut the bill, in essence, would render it ineffective. So there's political, there's always political forces out there that can undermine the legislation.
And one further question, just to tag on to that, as you look at the Alaska situation where the governor and essentially the state has gotten into a lawsuit that's challenging the mandate that's coming down, how does it affect, does it still make this legislation necessary, or how does it affect the legislation if it does pass?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that is an excellent question. I'm glad you brought it up, and I should have addressed it in my opening remarks. Many states, Florida is a good example. Florida is the lead plaintiff in the case that's challenging the Affordable Care Act. Florida is establishing its exchange. Florida is moving forward on its own exchange. Most states are, even states that are profoundly opposed to the Affordable Care Act. Texas, another good example of a state that's moving forward with an exchange because you don't know what's going to happen in the Supreme Court. And, you know, Texas, like Alaska, doesn't want to have an exchange imposed upon it by the federal government from afar. So it's possible to embrace this idea, vote for this idea, and still be opposed to the Affordable Care Act. It's not inconsistent. It's just making sure you comply with the law as it exists, and at the same time challenge that law in the correct venue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you know of any federal grants that are still available if we can implement this?
There, the grant funding is, to my understanding, at least as far as planning an exchange, is something we have missed out on. And you know, the administration and I had our battles about that last year. That's a battle that's now passed. The administration is moving forward with its own plan to create an exchange, which I welcome. I think it's a good idea. I'm concerned that they're trying to do something as fundamental and as large an idea of this outside the legislature. I think this is something we need to be informed of and involved in. The administration, and I don't know if the commissioner's here. I spoke yesterday to folks in his office. He is here. That's great. I'd be interested in hearing sort of where they are with respect to this idea.
Seeing no other initial questions, we have four fiscal notes in your packet. One note from the Department of Administration for $3 million in general funds for the cost of purchasing bandwidth, hardware, and software and maintenance of the system. One note from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development for $1,824,700 in general funds for 12 new positions to manage the program as well as board costs and supplies. This FY13 fiscal note was increased by $162,600 due to higher personnel service costs. One note from the Department of Health and Social Services for $182,700 in general funds and $182,700 matching federal funds for three new part-time analyst positions, and 10 fiscal note from the Division of Insurance. And we'll have a brief at ease. Got nobody in the room to come forward to want to speak on this bill, so we'll bring it back to the bill sponsor. Any final questions for the bill sponsor? Any final comments by the bill sponsor before we set this bill aside for further review?
I can have a conversation in the hall with the commissioner about their efforts to get an exchange started strictly through the RFP process. As I say, I spoke to their office yesterday. I'm interested in what they're up to, but it's, of course, a separate effort from this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Senator French. So we'll set this bill aside for further review. Next up, Senate Bill 13 by Senator French. To waive park fees for disabled veterans. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, set the bill aside for further review. With us today, Senator French, if you can introduce yourself again for the record, please, and walk us through this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hollis French, I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. SB 13 is a simple idea. We are one of the most veteran-rich and veteran-friendly states in the nation. And you combine that idea with Alaskans' love of the outdoors and their devotion to hunting, to fishing, to hiking, to experiencing the great things that Alaska has to offer. And it seemed like a natural idea to extend many of the benefits we grant to disabled veterans to a few areas that have been overlooked. Simply stated, in the past, we have granted free and discounted access to state park facilities in a lot of areas. This bill before you extends the free benefit to boat ramps, to RV facilities and day parking, and provides a 50% discount for public use cabins. That's really the long and the short of it, Mr. Chairman. idea is to just try to give back something to folks who are disabled through their service to the country, and do so in a way that helps them enjoy the great Alaskan outdoors. Thank you.
And then, is there a percentage of disability that triggers this?
Mr. Chairman, that's a great question, and it's 50%. That's a decision that's made by the Veterans Administration. Once they have decided that your disability is service-related, greater than 50%, you get you know, more or less the status of a disabled veteran, and that is a concept that the Department of Motor Vehicles and other state agencies are accustomed to working with, so that, you know, the idea isn't abused, that it goes to deserving individuals who are injured through their service and not from some other source.
Do we have any other initial questions for the bill sponsor? We have one fiscal note from the Department of Natural Resources that has been updated to reflect the changes made in the previous committee. This fiscal note requests a $10,000 general fund appropriation to cover the cost of administering the program. $206,000 is currently in the governor's FY13 budget request. Approval of the governor's request and this fiscal note will cover the anticipated loss in revenues resulting from this bill. We'll now move on to public testimony. We have one person signed up in the off-net. Nobody signed up in the room right now, so we'll go to the off-net. If you could introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then speak to the bill, please. Claire LeClaire.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not here to testify. I'm here just to answer questions, should you have any. I'm with the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Parks.
So do you support the bill? Does the division support the bill, or do you want to comment on that?
No, sir. I'm not here to comment or testify on the bill. I'm here just to answer any questions the committee may have.
That's fine. Okay, thank you. That concludes everybody on the sign-up list and everybody in the room, so we'll close the public hearing portion, come back to the committee. We have any questions? Senator Olson, for the bill sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator French, does a federal parks have some type of a provision for granting waivers as well for their park, for disabled veterans?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I believe they do. I believe that the National Park System will let you in for free to parks if you're a disabled veteran.
And if I can continue, Mr. Chairman, as you look at the whole budget issue and the fees that are collected and the lost revenue that's there, which may or may not be significant, obviously it's going to be significant to a veteran if he's having trouble with strapped finances already. What kind of effect is it going to have on the maintenance budget of these parks, especially as we look at the possibility of dwindling revenues in the future and we are going to be able to keep up with the maintenance that's required by these parks?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it's a great question. And I think keep in mind that last year there were about 1,600 park passes issued to disabled veterans. So it's not an overwhelming number. It's a fairly small number. I think the overall budget effect is negligible. But it raises a good point, because just yesterday I was having a conversation with one of my colleagues who suggested extending this to all veterans, or who suggested extending it to all seniors, because we want to get more people out to our parks. And I kind of had the same reaction you did, which is, you know, as much as you want to sort of give back to the folks who've given to us, you know, at some level the parks are under budget pressure. I'm a park user, and the facilities are you know, not the finest. And so, you know, the more people who go for free means less money to keep them up.
Okay. Do we have any other follow-up? Any other questions for the? We'll come back to the bill sponsor. Any final words before we set this bill aside for further review?
No, Mr. Chairman, thank you. It's a fairly simple bill, but I appreciate the committee turning its attention to it.
Thank you, Senator French. Next up, Senate Bill 62 by Senator McGuire regarding the Civil Legal Service Fund. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside for further review. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 62 would allow, under the existing statute that set up the Civil Legal Services Fund, and as you know, there's no dedicated fund under the Constitution, but it's a fund that was set up specifically to allow for the legislature to make appropriations to it and deposits to it. It would add language to that particular statute specifying that 25% of court fees that are filed annually would also be appropriated from the Alaska court system to the Civil Legal Services Fund. Alaska Legal Services is a nonprofit association that helps seniors, children, any Alaskan that's below 125% of the Alaska poverty ceiling. In particular, Mr. Chairman, I draw your attention to seniors and the letter in your packet from the Commission on Aging, and the fact that five cases of all of those that are currently calling in for help for things like guardianship issues, conservatorship, fraud, as we've had testimony throughout the year and other bills, we know that seniors are disproportionately subject to identity theft and fraud cases. But right now, Alaska Legal Services is underfunded, and so five of all of the people that call for help are they can only accept one out of the five that are called for. Similarly, in the area of domestic violence, as you know, this governor has called for a Choose Respect campaign, and you'll see a few other letters that are targeting that specific area from the many of the services that the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault is one example. And what it shows is many of the women that choose to leave homes where they are being victimized don't have an opportunity, they don't have resources to seek legal assistance. So they do come to the Alaska Legal Services right away to try to assist them with their children, custody, temporary housing, lease issues, that they might have legal issues. And right now, Alaska Legal Services is forced to turn away many of those families. Children are present in 80% of the households that have come to Alaska Legal Services, so this bill is important to me, and the cause of Alaska Legal Services has been very important to me for both our seniors and for our children in particular. Currently, Alaska Legal Services has offices in Anchorage, Bethel, Dillingham, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kenai, Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Nome, and Palmer, but only about 20 attorneys service all of those various locations. It went from an all-time high of the legislature funding Alaska Legal Services of $1.2 million, now down to just over $300,000. And I've taken this on over the last 12 years that I've been in the legislature, trying to find a way to get some sort of consistent source of funding back into this organization that does so much good to help families, again, seniors and children. And certainly it also helps our courts. What you'll find in testimony from the court system is that when Alaskans come in pro se, and that's, as you know, Mr. Chairman, without legal counsel, they end up being an incredible drain on the legal system because they don't know the rules of evidence, they don't know how to present their cases, and yet we allow, certainly under our Constitution, for any Alaskan to bring their case forward. So they come in and they represent themselves, and sometimes inartfully. So it's a savings to us as well in terms of running the court system. So the bill, as you can see it's a simple one-page bill, adds to the existing Title 37 language and would allow the legislature to appropriate any monies it wanted from the general fund, but would also allow for an amount from the general fund that's up to 25% of the filing fees received from the Alaska court system. And I'll end by saying last year in 2011, the court fees totaled $2,666,900. So 25% of that would be $666,725. And so it's a small amount, Mr. Chairman, but we think with that kind of consistent effort on the part of the legislature, again, it would require an appropriation, as you know, under the operations budget. But with that kind of consistent funding, we'd be able to build that office back up again.
Okay. Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Senator McGuire, as you look at the numbers that are there, how many, with the increase in funding that would go there, how many more lawyers you think would come on board to go ahead and help some of the people that are needy?
You know, at this point, I'd like to ask if I could, Nicole, to come up and talk a little bit about what her opinion is. Through the chair, Senator Olson, I could give two answers. One would be my hope is that they're going to be able to start adding lawyers, but I'd also probably tell you they're going to fill the backlog that they have now. But
we'll just wait. Okay. We'll take care of it. We'll go through the normal process here.
There isn't a specified amount that they have set aside to say X amount per lawyer, but it's their hope that they can have more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have any other initial question? We have three fiscal notes in your packet, 10 fiscal note from the Department of Law, 10 fiscal note from the court system, and one indeterminate fiscal note from the Department of Administration, Office of Public Advocacy. So we'll now go into the public hearing portion. And we'll ask Nicole Nelson to come forward, please. And if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and help Senator McGuire with the question that she had, please.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to address the committee. And thank you, Senator McGuire, for sponsoring this important legislation. I am Nicole Nelson, and I am the Executive Director of Alaska Legal Services. And first off, to answer Senator Olson's question, we would anticipate that if the filing fees, the $670,000 per year, were appropriated to us, that would represent about a 20% increase in our overall budget. And we anticipate that if all other funding sources stayed flat, we would be able to serve, that would enable us to serve an additional 500 families. And to answer the question about adding staff, our attorneys cost about $77,000 per year in total. So I guess if you did the math, I think that's about 9 attorneys, I believe. So Alaska Legal, as Senator McGuire has said, Alaska Legal Services is a nonprofit law firm that's been doing business in Alaska for the last 40 years. And during that time, we've been making a big difference in the lives of the low-income community. In the last year alone, we have been on the forefront of fighting the epidemic of domestic violence that's plaguing our state. We served over 550 victims of domestic violence in the last year alone. And again, 78% of those cases had children in their households. We are the largest provider of civil legal services to victims of domestic violence. We also served over 600 seniors last year. We protected them from financial and physical abuse, and we assisted them with wills and probates and other powers of attorney and other end-of-life aging issues. We also helped 300 disabled individuals gain access to health care coverage and the Social Security benefits they so desperately needed. And we also prevented homelessness for over 350 families. We've made certain that access to justice is a reality in some measure in our rural communities. Over 40% of our clients are in Alaska's rural communities. And in total, we provided direct representation to over 2,500 families in the last year and served countless more through our website, the materials on our website, and nearly 2,000 who attended our clinics and self-help clinics. Our staff is paid well below the market rate, making us probably one of the best deals in town. Our staff do this work because you know, they value it. It's such good work. And a staff attorney starting in our firm in Anchorage is going to make about $38,000 per year compared to a first-year attorney general or DA, which is going to make about $68,000. We also have a strong pool of volunteer attorneys who volunteer their time to help us out and a volunteer board that help us stretch our dollars. And we have enjoyed widespread community and bipartisan support. In each community where we maintain an office, we have local financial contributions in each of those communities. And so that's the good news. The bad news is that last year we also had to turn away hundreds of families who sought assistance with such compelling needs. They were seeking protection from abuse, they were faced with losing their homes, and they could not access critical medical care. And we turned them away not because their cases lacked merit or not because they weren't laws to protect them. We had to turn them away because we didn't have the staff and resources to help. And the thing of it is, it's heartbreaking to do so, especially when we know that we're very effective at what we do. And I'll give you one example of that. Over the last 5 years, we've looked at the cases where we represented victims of domestic violence, and we were successful 96% of the time in getting our client what they needed. And so it borders on the tragic to think we're turning people away when we know we can help, and I know that I can find attorneys who will work far below the market rate to do this work. And the fact of the matter is, our client base is growing every year, and funding has not kept pace. We have an estimated 88,000 Alaskans living in poverty, and an Alaska Supreme Court task force in 2001 estimated that of those 88,000 folks, 33,000 of them would encounter a civil legal need in any given year. So we're just tipping, you know, we're just tipping, reaching the tip of the iceberg. And these indicators are grim, and I think that we as a community need to find a way to bridge the gap between those who have access to our services and those who are able to get them. And I believe that SB 62 is part of that solution. By allowing the legislature to designate up to 25% of the court system's filing fees to those who provide free legal assistance to low-income Alaskans, it would go a long way towards bridging that gap. So I thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we're going to ask Nancy Mead to come forward, please. She could introduce herself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Nancy Mead. I'm general counsel with the Alaska court system.
And the fees that are that the court system collects, are they general fund?
Yes.
Money?
They are deposit. The filing fees are deposited into the general fund.
So this would be a direction of already general funds and used as general funds.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions for Ms. Mead? Okay. Thank you. We've got six people online. We're going to do the off-net first. What I'd like you, excuse me, what we need you to do is introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill, please, and keep your comments to 2 minutes, if you could, and we will start with Frederick Nielsen from Dillingham. Mr. Nielsen.
Yes, my name is Frederick Nielsen. I'm a 73-year-old Alaska native from Dillingham, Alaska, and I'm representing myself. I would like to say that I'm very grateful for Alaska Legal Services, and if it wasn't for Alaska Legal Services, I would have lost my $200,000 home and properties in Dillingham. And so without them, I never could have saved my home. So I just want to testify to you, sir, and let you know that Alaska Legal Services is very vital to our Native people who are lower income.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Next up, we'll go to Wasilla Sunny Raidbrow.
Yes, my name is Sunny Raidbrow, and I live in Wasilla, Alaska. I've been associated with Alaska Legal Services for about the last 8 years, and I am one of those success stories that Nicole was talking about. I first came to them with problems with cut PCA services, and they were denying my services, and without Alaska Legal Services, I would not be on the programs I am right now. I'm 66 years old. I'm permanently disabled, and that was just my first introduction. I went to them again when my home that I was in the middle of purchasing was being embezzled away from me by a owner who I had no idea what the legal ramifications were. Out of those issues and many court appearances, many filings, I had no idea what was involved, but Alaska Legal Services treated me like I was the only client. They treated me respectfully. They explained things. And out of that, I did not get my home back, but because of that, I was able to get a small amount of money, and through that, I was able to go ahead with their support and find another home, and now am a proud homeowner and still taking advice from them. I have been involved with them concerning the food quality for home deliveries on the Meals on Wheels program. I've been working very closely to try to find a way to find better quality and quantity for those that are receiving home meals. They've been extremely instrumental in my area in improving the lives and qualities of the elders. I've watched them do things that were absolutely unbelievable and solve problems as the other ones have testified. This office serves in Palmer as a point of assistance to those as myself who are in desperate need with little or no cash, no intelligence concerning legal issues, and they are in dire consequence. Both Chelsea Hicks and Eric Codero and, of course, all of the attorneys in Anchorage, they've all put together and they help every single person that comes in there when they have the funding and the staff. I am asking you for Senate Bill 62 to please further the assistance for those that are so dedicated, all the attorneys and all the volunteers, in their pursuit of equal justice for those that are able and for those who are not. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. Next up, we'll go to Ketchikan, Nancy
TG. I'm Nancy TG, and I am the board chair for Rendezvous Senior Day Services and for Gateway Human Services here in Ketchikan. I'm also the local coordinator for the AARP Tax Aid, meaning I've seen a lot of the seniors who are in need and what their income levels would be. I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 62 to increase the funding for Alaska Legal Services, specifically as it applies to senior citizens in Alaska. Over the years, I've sat through funding meetings, and every one of those I've noted that Alaska Legal Services is not necessarily recognized as a funding or an agency that supports the seniors of our community. That's the furthest of the truth, because they are the key to getting services to most of the people that I've worked with or that the agencies that I represent work with. I've watched where people have had like $100 a month or an increase in Social Security that's prevented them from receiving assistance, mostly medical through Medicaid, and with the Alaska Legal Services providing Miller Trust, they've been able to get the Medicaid programs and seniors, any kind of case management that they've needed to keep them at home so they're not using. Alaska doesn't have a lot of assisted living or nursing home programs, so to keep them at home is really critical. Medicaid is the place that they need to be to do that. Locally, they've been able to provide services, and we need much more of them for advanced directives, wills, durable powers of attorney. Most of the people who are low income don't have access to those kinds of services and don't even know that they really should have them until they end up in a crisis in a hospital, and then we all have to scramble to get into the hospitals to support them. I've seen other services that they've been providing. I've watched and been part of some of the property disputes that have pushed people into homelessness locally. One of the local paramedics or paralegals with Alaska Legal Services, Deborah, we've ended up at the hospital helping with abused seniors to get them back to their families. I'm also an insurance agent, a health insurance agent, and I know that the population is dramatically changing. We're getting to having an older age group. Locally, we're seeing more poverty. There's more homeless in Ketchikan and more seniors that are ending up into the poverty and homeless area. At Rendezvous Senior Day Services, we're seeing a lot more seniors with Alzheimer's and dementia. About three-quarters of our attendees in that program are limited by one of those diagnoses. And that's about 24 attendees, and most are low income, and all of them need Medicaid support.
Okay, Nancy,
Alaska Legal Services, without any doubt, needs additional support. We need a lot more support here locally, so I urge you to support Senate Bill 62. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today, Nancy. Next up, Unalaklik, Francis Degnan.
Yes, good morning. This is Francis Degnan. I'm lifelong resident of Unalakleet, Alaska, and I currently serve on the Tribal Council and the Corporation Board, but I've lived in Unalakleet all my life. And in the past years, Alaska Legal Services Corporation, when the prices were low for transportation and it was easier to get about, we had more contact with attorneys that were assigned in Nome. But in 94, I think it was the last time that they really came out into the villages, and there was a long hiatus until last year, which when they were able to get to Unalakleet, and a lot of the local people, mainly seniors, were very much interested in getting their wills and other needed documents drafted up, which they couldn't have done otherwise because the availability of attorneys is very, you know, hard to find in rural Alaska. And also, we do have a lot of persons that do require assistance pertaining to domestic violence, and there are a lot of issues that require legal consultation, which is not available to the low-income person. And so what they do is they don't search for the services. And so I've assisted just as a volunteer, just interested in a healthy community and a happy community. Whenever anyone comes to me for advice, I generally refer them to Alaska Legal Services, and it's a very important service to low-income people of all ages. And I want to support the Senate bill, and I think it's very important for the maintenance of this service to the low-income people. And with the high prices that we are faced just living in a small village in rural Alaska, you have to make your choices is what's important to you. And so the legal issues get brushed off to the side, and very few people do pro bono. So I think that I would very much encourage you to support the bill, and I thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Francis, today. Next up, we'll go to Anchorage. Peggy Brockman, please. Peggy Brockman in Anchorage.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Peggy Brockman of Anchorage, and I'm not affiliated with anyone. I'm speaking for myself. And I am a senior citizen as well as unemployed, which allowed me to qualify for Alaska Legal Services. I didn't realize until listening to this hearing and the remarks of Nicole Nelson and Lisa McGuire that I was so fortunate to be selected for their service. Last year, Alaska Legal Services successfully resolved two legal matters for me, which I had neither the legal or financial resources to handle on my own. I support funding for Alaska Legal Services and request that you consider increasing their funding this year. The number of seniors in Alaska is increasing, and therefore the number of senior cases will be increasing, which will require more money. That's the end of my remarks, and I want to thank Lisa McGuire and the Senate Finance Committee for hearing me out and for funding Alaska Legal Services.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next up and last on the list, we'll go to Anchorage. Monica Looney, please.
Hello, I'm here.
Yes, Ms. Looney, could you?
Oh, okay.
You want to testify, please?
Yes, I do. I'm the mother of a little boy, age 3, and my ex-husband has committed domestic violence against me, and also had a history of violent domestic violence. and of severe drug abuse. After we separated, he continued to be violent, harassing, and stalking, not leaving us alone. His family immediately hired an attorney, thinking that since I was very low income, would not be able to find representation. And I tried to start the legal process and get a protective order by myself, but I found the process very overwhelming. I sought help from the Alaska Legal Services in 2010, and there my attorney helped me, excuse me, to understand my rights and how I could help protect myself and my son. Alaska Legal Services assisted me with getting a divorce, custody of my son with the maximum protection of his visitation with his father, and a long-term domestic violence protective order. Through the divorce, they also made certain that I wasn't responsible for a mountain of medical debt that my ex-husband had accrued during the marriage. One of the things that I do, because I am so very grateful that my son is safe, I send them, especially my attorney Maggie, a Christmas picture of my son every year so that they can see the face of the child that is growing and is happy and who is smiling. And without them, I don't know what I would have done. And I would just like them, I would like you to know that and to please support SB 62, because I'm sure I am just but one voice of a lot of mothers out there that are very scared for their children and for themselves. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Monica, today. That concludes the off-net and the LIOs, so we'll go ahead and close the public testimony portion. We have nobody else signed up in the room to testify. We'll come back. Is there any questions to the bill sponsor? Any final comments by the bill sponsor before we set the bill aside?
I just want to thank this committee for hearing it today and for their past funding of Alaska Legal Services. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. That concludes the meeting today. Our next meeting will be tomorrow, the 1st of February at 9 a.m. There'll be four bills on the agenda. Senate Bill 119, Athletic Trainer Licensing, Senate Bill 38, Police and Fire Death Benefits, Senate Bill 83, Teachers Board Certification Incentives, Senate Bill 115, Portable Electronic Insurance. We have quite a few bills that we've already had first readings on also, so don't forget to look through the bills. If you have concerns or issues on any of them, you know, get back to the office. And we will take a look at those changes, because we'll be looking at bringing some of these bills forward for final review and moving on to another committee in the near future. With that, we are adjourned.